This is Tech News Briefing. I'm Tanya Bustos reporting from the newsroom in New York. And as investigators work to assess just who hacked Marriott International, one place they're hunting is what The Wall Street Journal's Robert McMillan calls the shadowy digital bazaars where thieves and spies trade open personal data. A look at just what it's like to shop for personal information in the black market, and it's more convenient and user-friendly than you think. More after these tech headlines. Huawei's finance chief must reside at Vancouver homes and adhere to a curfew while awaiting a decision on her extradition to the U.S. A judge's decision frees Meng Wanzhou after more than a week in detention as the U.S. seeks the exec's extradition to face charges over violating Iran sanctions. Bail is set at $10 million Canadian dollars, $7.5 U.S. million dollars. Ms. Meng is due back in court in February. Software is rebuilding the construction industry from the ground up, and it appears that Procore Technologies is the latest startup looking to capitalize. Procore, which provides cloud-based project management software for builders of commercial skyscrapers and homes alike, was valued at about $1 billion in 2016 funding, and now is seeking to raise capital at a $2.8 billion valuation. The Journal's Mark Vardabedian has more on the filing by the firm in Delaware that was identified by a lab company which runs the Prime Unicorn Index. And a top Microsoft executive says artificial intelligence can help refine customer experience. In the Journal's conversation with Scott Guthrie, Microsoft's Executive Vice President of Microsoft Cloud and AI Group, he shares how businesses can get value out of an emerging tech like AI. He says the trick is going to be how companies that are well-established adopt the tech early so that they don't get disrupted, and to what extent they use the tech to also disrupt themselves and become even stronger. Read more about how Mr. Guthrie thinks companies can marry AI with human expertise at WSJ Pro's feature on artificial intelligence at WSJ.com. Coming up, thieves can now nab your data in just a few minutes for just a few bucks. A look at the underground booming business of selling stolen data on the dark web. A seemingly endless string of breaches have hit big companies and their users in recent years. 500 million potential victims at Marriott Starwood properties, 117 million users in the 2012 hack of LinkedIn, 3 billion at Yahoo in 2013. The list goes on. What you might not know is that these attacks fuel a black market swimming in stolen data, bought, sold, and repackaged for criminal use. Here to fill us in on what's been going on while we were just living our lives none the wiser, for a change, is Robert McMillan in our New York City podcast studio. Welcome.
Hey, Tanya. Great to be in New York.
Nice to see you. So let's just get into it. I think most of us would be surprised to learn just how much stolen data is available on the dark web. So enlighten us, if you would, or frighten us, I should say, because this is important. It was actually quite surprising to me.
It's all there. I mean,
everything, right?
Yeah. If somebody wants your personal data, your date of birth, your social, they can get it. I mean, that was a revelation to me as well. But, you know, I interviewed an FBI agent who has worked on many of these cases, and he said it's all there. I believe him.
As such, it's created this what you call a pipeline for personal data. It's made it so cheap and easy to get. The asking price for a single piece of data, such as a credit card number, what does that go for? I'd love our listeners to get a feel for these kinds of things.
Yeah. So, you know, the data can be very cheap because, like, your identity is the raw material for an entire kind of factory line of products that are made from that data. So they can, you know, very large databases can be sold for not a lot of money. So you could be looking at paying, you know, a fraction of a cent for a username and a password, you know, a nickel for a social security number, or, you know, you asked about credit card. Well, U.S. credit card numbers go for between $7 and $11, and that would include, you know, the three-digit number, you know, on the back of them. European credit card numbers are a little bit more expensive. Then you got bank accounts, you know, bank accounts that have been validated. You know, you can buy those for maybe starting at $100. So you get access to a bank account, and then it's up to you, the criminal who's bought access to this bank account, to empty it of money and somehow get that money into your hands, which is risky.
Wow.
So there is this whole range of things that are basically being bought and sold by criminals, and it's all based on your data that's been, you know, honestly very poorly stewarded by these companies. You know,
right.
Companies are supposed to protect your data, and they're not doing it, and now criminals are making money off
of
it.
So what was interesting to learn, though, was just this cottage industry that's been created. For example, criminals assemble these comprehensive files called FULS with a Z, which I like. But it's interesting to learn because these things are packaged, processed, and sold in bulk. How did this become the whole business that it is?
Well, it's creativity, right? Of the, you know, you're a criminal, and I think in the early days, the idea was to break into bank accounts or maybe steal credit card numbers from people. The market gets saturated, or you get this data, you use a bunch of the credit cards, or you get basically so many credit card numbers you can't process them all yourself. So maybe sell those to somebody else. Usernames and passwords, the same kind of thing. You know, people just experiment and innovate. It's a very entrepreneurial space, cybercrime.
Create criminal tutorials for sale as well on this dark web.
Yeah, it's kind of like, if you have this way of making money, why would you sell the techniques that you're using to somebody else? And some of these products are not good, right? Like some people sell things that are, they claim that they, you know, it's a database of passwords that will get you into Amazon.com accounts, and you buy it and they don't work, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really, these are criminals we're talking about here, so.
Right. So in light of this, in light of the, you know, the latest that's been going on with the Marriott breach, there's no shortage of cyber vulnerability. You're in town for a big conference on the topic. What do we, the consumer, do? Where do we land right now? How do we be the most proactive in our affairs, considering all of this going on?
Well, if you're not planning on applying for a credit card or a loan of some sort in the near future, you should get a credit freeze, right? Like that can save you a lot of hassle. And, you know, quite honestly, you should get one for your kids, too, because the criminals are not above stealing the identities of children. And misusing that. So credit freeze is a pretty easy thing to do. You can do it for free now. You kind of check in with the credit bureaus and just it puts a barrier to somebody stealing your identity and taking out a car loan without your permission. That's a really simple thing. Even a more of a no-brainer would be to get a second-factor authentication on your email account in particular. You often, if your email gets hacked, that becomes like the gateway to getting into all kinds of other accounts. Mm-hmm. And less than 10% of users have two-factor authentication on services such as Gmail. So you can do that. I mean, the way I recommend doing it is downloading an app called Authenticator, which gives you a little number that you enter when you're trying to log into Gmail in addition to your password from a new computer. So if somebody's trying to log into your Gmail account from a new computer, they'd need to have this number. And if they don't have it, they can't get in. That's a no-brainer. And then we have an article in the journal that I think Kate Bindley wrote a while ago about password managers, which
are also
a great idea. Password managers basically keep track of all your accounts and allow you to have really complicated, hard to remember passwords and be able to log in a variety of different services. Because obviously, if you make a hard to remember password, it's hard to remember it when you're trying to log in.
Been there.
Yeah. So you have a manager that handles that all for you is a nice thing.
Wall Street Journal reporter Robert McMillan reminding us of things that are very important these days. Thanks for the time.
My pleasure. Great to chat.
That's it for the Tech News Briefing. I'm Tanya Bustos, reporting from the newsroom in New York. Thanks for listening.